Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., born into the Kennedy dynasty and the namesake of one of the most famous men in America. He has been in the spotlight for decades. Many of us grew up seeing the Kennedy family as the closest thing we had to American royalty. The patriarch, Joseph Kennedy, an entrepreneur, ambassador to the UK, and first head of the SEC under President Roosevelt, helming a family of 9 children, one of whom is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s dad. The names of those children would come to define politics for much of the 20th century as they became war heroes, senators, attorneys general, even a president. Bobby's father was Attorney General Robert Kennedy, assassinated in 1968 while on his way toward becoming the Democratic nominee for president. Bobby was just 14 years old at the time, but years later would go on to follow in his father's legal footsteps, entering the legal profession and becoming one of the nation's top environmental lawyers, leading the charge against various toxins and pollutants and demanding remediation of chemical wastelands like the Hudson River in New York. But it is his position on vaccines that has left him a bit of an outcast in some circles, including with many in the medical community, the media, and even with some of his own family. I spoke to Robert for nearly 4 hours, my longest interview ever. We discussed everything from his position on vaccines and censorship to the claims he makes in his latest book, The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. The book, essentially blackballed by the media, is nonetheless an enormous hit with the American people, making the bestsellers lists of The New York Times, Amazon, The Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. And while what you're about to hear is not a cheerleading session on vaccines, it is an important conversation about public health, the agencies in charge, and whether we have been getting the protection we deserve from those we fund with our tax dollars. We taped this conversation about a week ago, and we have spent the time since taking a deeper dive into some of his more controversial claims. What you will hear are many of his opinions, along with some context and some fact-checking as we go. We did this because we want our audience to hear this discussion, but to understand where Robert and his critics most differ, and because we hope this exchange can be seen on as many public platforms as possible. We think it's a vital exchange. Also, if you're watching on YouTube or listening on the podcast services, you can find links to other sources like the CDC, the WHO, and so on in our episode description. We've tried to provide you with as many resources as possible. You can make up your own minds. We talked about far more than just vaccines, however. This is, after all, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., including an incredibly revealing conversation about the toll his work has taken on his wife, actress Cheryl Hines, the assassinations of his father and his uncle, and why he thinks the Democratic Party is no longer what they fought so hard to represent. We even went there on Marilyn Monroe and claims about his father and his uncle allegedly having affairs with her. Truly nothing to his credit was off limits. We have divided the interview into 2 separate shows because clearly there's a lot to cover. In today's show, we dive into vaccines. I asked him point blank how he can claim to be pro-vaccination, which is what he claims, when his words and positions sound far from it. We also look into Dr. Fauci, his career, his finances, and why Kennedy says Fauci is not the hero the media made him into during the COVID pandemic. Watch. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Megan.
All right, let's start with the Fauci book, because one of the most interesting things about it is how it's been totally blackballed by basically everyone. I mean, it's been a complete media blackout on the book.
We've gone into 12 separate printings, and so we ran out of books a dozen times.
Wow.
And now they have plenty of books.
Wow. And Bobby, if we can, just to remind folks, your voice is a little raspy, and there's a reason for that, just so people aren't distracted. And would you care to share the reason for that?
I apologize to that, particularly to your listeners and to you, because my voice is really hard to listen to. I had a very, very, unusually strong voice until I was 42 years old, 1996, 1997. I was struck with this condition, which is called spasmodic dystonia. My throat, actually, if you scoped my throat, it would look like a very, very healthy throat. But I have a neurological condition. So my brain is instructing my voice box to tighten up. And for some reason that nobody really understands, it goes in and out. So some days my voice is pretty strong, and other days it's very staggered and kind of difficult to listen to. And today is not a good day for my voice. So again, I apologize to you.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm sorry to even raise it.
You know what? Whenever I give a speech, Megan, I always explain it to people because, I can't listen to myself. I have never listened to my own podcast. I don't listen to myself on TV or radio because it's disturbing for me to hear my voice. So I feel sorry for people who need to listen to it. And I feel like it helps me to give them an explanation.
You're worth it. You're worth it. And, you know, I was thinking about it as I was reading about your condition, thinking it's a particularly cruel thing to have handed to you, right? I mean, it's quite literally the loss of your voice, right? It's to have your actual voice diminished in any way or interfered with must be galling, must be frustrating. I don't know. How has that felt to have that deteriorate?
Well, you know, it's definitely a paradox or an irony because so much of what I do is dependent on my voice as an attorney, as a public speaker, as, you know, somebody who is a voice now kind of for the movement that, you know, I have this particular disability. But, you know, I think there's people who have a lot worse disabilities than me. I have a cousin who lost a leg when he was 11 years old. My family has been around people, you know, working on disabilities for many, many years. So I've never spent even a second feeling sorry for myself or, you know, it's just something that God gave me. Mm-hmm. I have to figure out why is this a gift? Why has this challenge been given to me? And that's, you know, and then to do the best I can with it and not be deterred by it. It's not something I would complain about.
Well, the patriarch of the Kennedy family, Joseph Kennedy, the man with whom it all started, and that's your grandpa, Bobby Kennedy's dad, Jack Kennedy's dad. As I understand it, he wasn't so big on whiners. And so you were all raised from the cradle to toughen up and not walk around feeling woe is me.
Yeah, I think that's right. He would, if you whined around him, he would come into the house clapping his hands, said there are no whiners in this house. There's no complaining in this house. And, you know, we were reminded growing up time after time that we were very, very fortunate. Compared to 99% of humanity, we had a very, very cushy existence, and, you know, that none of us really had a right to complain about anything. And I, you know, I think it's a better way to live to just say, you're not going to complain. I think self-pity is crippling to people.
Yes. I mean, coming from that kind of an upbringing and family approach to life, today's day and age must be very frustrating to you. I'm sure your grandfather would be horrified to see how much we lean into victimhood today, whether actual or imagined. It's become something we prize. It's celebrated. It's no longer something to triumph over. It's more like, great, you've got something to complain about. We all want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that anybody ever got to their deathbed and said, you know, I wish I had spent more time complaining. I think one of the things that I found out during my early sobriety, it was really a technique that was a gift to me, was that gratitude was a choice and that, you know, my inclination, I think the inclination of most people is not to be grateful, but to wake up every day with a sense of impending doom and then, you know, to look for reasons to be discontent. And it's really about the way that we process reality. You could have two people who are doing this, who are shoveling manure, and one of them could be whistling and laughing, and the other one could be grumbling and cursing. And it all is taking place inside our own heads. You know, how do we choose to practice to process our reality? Do we choose to look at the glass half empty or glass full? I every day of my life, I make a gratitude list. I just list, you know, a lot of banal things like orange juice, antibiotics, and air conditioning, and the glass on the windows, the things that generations, 20,000 generations of humanity never had those things. We live like gods compared to most of the human beings in history, even the most unfortunate, you know, American today. And so we can either choose to be grateful about those things, or we can, choose to be anxious. And, you know, it was a revelation to me to learn to realize that that was a choice, and it wasn't a condition that was, you know, that was imposed upon us.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I mean, I wish people could understand the full extent of what you've been through. How old are you now?
I'm actually 68 years old.
68. I mean, you look so young. You look good. You know, because it's crazy. Like, people will have one of the many things that have happened to you and spend the rest of their lives lamenting it and leaning into their sadness, their depression. It's something that defines them. Not to bum you out, but I'm just off the top of my head, obviously, your father was assassinated. Your uncle, the president of the United States, was assassinated when you were a young boy. Your cousin JFK Jr. died far too young in a plane crash. You've had your own personal challenges, and here you are on a mission, staying on the thing that you care most about, the environment, public health. You've taken a ton of incoming, you know, you've been demonized by large factions of the press. You never stop, and I admire it. Okay, so let's go and let's talk about vaccines, because I know a lot of people, the reason a lot of people will dismiss the book on Fauci is the prior stance on vaccines. And when you say RFK Jr. to people, they say, oh, you know, he's against vaccines. He hates the MMR vaccine. You know, it's saved millions of people. It's helped, you know, so many kids. And you have been critical of, obviously, the vaccine regime. So for the record, where do you stand on vaccines like the MMR vaccine and other related childhood vaccines today?
Well, I have never been anti-vaccine. That is a pejorative that's applied to me in order to marginalize me and silence me. And as you point out, have people dismiss me as somebody who's irrational or crazy. What I've said is we should have safe vaccines. We should have good, robust science. We should have regulators that are independent of the pharmaceutical industry that is profiteering on the vaccines.
That's true.
I started doing this work trying to get mercury out of the vaccines. And, you know, I was very focused on that issue, because mercury clearly is a neurotoxin. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies that show that it is devastating. It causes dramatic IQ loss. It damages every organ. It causes all kinds of brain damage, and that there's no safe level of mercury exposure. And the idea that we would be injecting mercury directly into babies, I was suing at that time. This is 2005. I had lawsuits against, I think, 39 coal-burning power plants and cement kilns for discharging mercury from the stacks. Mercury was getting precipitating out of the rainfall, getting into our fish. FDA did a study in 2003 that showed that every freshwater fish in America had dangerous levels of mercury in its flesh. And, you know, it occurred to me that we were living a science fiction nightmare where my children and the children of every other American could now no longer engage in the seminal primal activity of American youth, which is to go fishing with their mom or dad in the local fishing hole and then come home and safely eat the fish. Oh, I've been trying for 17 years to get the mercury out of the vaccines. It's out of many of